Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
There was a time before cable, when the local anchorman reigned supreme, when people believed everything they heard on TV. This was an age when only men were allowed to read the news. And in San Diego, one anchorman was more man than the rest. His name was Ron Burgundy. He was like a god walking amongst mere mortals. He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr, and suits so fine they made Sinatra look like a hobo. In other words, Ron Burgundy was the balls.
I look good. I mean, really good. Hey, everyone! Come and see how good I look!
Ribs. I had ribs for lunch. That's why I'm doing this.
How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow?
How are you? You look awfully nice tonight. Maybe don't wear a bra next time. No, I was talking to you. No, not her. I don't know her name. What is it? Lanolin? Lanolin? Like sheep's wool?
Unique New York. Unique New York.
I love scotch. I love scotch. Scotch is scotch, scotch. Here it goes down. Down into my belly.
The arsonist has oddly shaped feet.
I'm a shark. 30 seconds. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
Run.
What?
Oh, come on, Audrey. I look like hell. I got bags under my eyes. What's that? Well, if you were a man, I would punch you. I'd punch you right in the mouth. That's Bush. Bush League. The human torch was denied a bank loan. You hear me? Audrey! Look at me! I'm sorry. All right, I'm sorry.
Ho, 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 ho,
ho. All right, we're on. Ready, Phil. We're on in 5, 4.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing for Ron Burgundy and his news team. Go time.
Channel 4 News with 5-time Emmy Award-winning anchor Ron Burgundy. Cham Kynes, sports. Rick Tamlin, weather. And your reporter in the field, Brian Fantana.
It's Channel 4 News at 6 o'clock.
It is 32 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the just a big mouthful of salad over there. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. What kind of salad is that?
It's kind of a...
Is it the kind with cheese?
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have cheese.
It's got feta cheese.
Okay.
Anywho, it is the, don't they feed you at home? I mean, I don't really care. I'm just sort of making the observation that, I mean, there's lots of people who choose, they eat, you know, they eat at other times in other places. As opposed to just looking over, and you're just like a combine. You're just the weeds going in.
If I don't eat in between the shows, then
you become cranky and silly.
I do.
I get that to happen.
The silly is unavoidable, but I do get cranky.
All right. Okay.
It's just too long. To time it, I would have to eat breakfast like right before Legion of News. Because there's this whole thing, and because we go on the air at noon, and then we go until, like, you know, 3:30 or 4, and that would be ideal, except that usually I eat breakfast around 8:30, and then I'm not hungry again until, like, 1.
Have you thought about eating breakfast maybe later? Have you thought of eating breakfast at maybe, like, 10? Maybe a second breakfast, maybe 11-sies?
I've thought about it. I have trouble.
I'm not saying you have food issues. I'm really not. I'm not trying to be that guy. I'm just saying.
Oh, I have food issues. No, that exists. No.
It's just the idea that you're not able to go like 3.5 hours without eating, without becoming cranky at other people in the room. And by other people, I mean me. I'm trying to figure out how to make that work best for me, Rick Emerson.
Well, actually, I could probably go 3.5 hours if I made sure that I ate something right before we went on.
What if I just gave you hooked up like a fructose drip of some kind?
That might work.
Okay.
That might work nicely.
Excellent.
Yes.
I don't really, and again, honestly, I mean this sincerely, I don't really care that you're eating. It's just that I look over. And you always look like a raccoon that's been caught rifling through, you know, like the meat drawer in the refrigerator or something. Sort of a, hello? Why are you looking? I'm not here. And it's, you just have this look of sort of, I don't know, it's sort of amusement and awkwardness and sort of embarrassment and like a vague sense of affront on your face. As though I'm looking somewhere that I ought not to be. Like I were just to whip open the dressing room at a Macy's.
Well, in this particular case, I just timed it poorly.
Okay.
I made the decision to stuff one last big bite of salad into my maw while you were talking. And then, I did that, and then you looked at me. And then I was stuck there just going chomp, 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 chomp.
It's
like an idiot.
It's like if I were to sort of, if I were to come into a changing room at like an upscale store of some kind, a boutique, and were to walk in as you were being covered in jingle bells and mice. And then you just looked at me kind of going, yes. So, all right. Why, hello, everyone. It is 38 minutes after the hour of 1 in this, the month of June of the year of our Lord, 2011. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, an excursion into whimsicality of all varieties. If you would like to join us today, it's 503-505-6964. By the way, I just have to point out what a strange world it is in which we live. So Thomas Gill, our tech master general, who is here. And when I say he's here, I mean, literally, he's like 2.5 feet from me. He's like, I'm here.
He's waving.
Just waved at me. Literally, I could reach over and like touch his foot. He's right. And yet then he just messaged me sort of on the screen. Something about, you know, she could have a sugary viso instead of a diet viso is what he was saying, which then might sort of obviate the whole need for lunch.
So he's like in the text box and across the room.
He's everywhere you want to be. He's sort of a Schrodinger's Thomas. He's at all places and yet nowhere.
He could probably call us on Skype at the same time.
Please don't call us on Skype. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. If you, however, and by you I mean somebody who's not, you know, like in the same room, because that would be weird, would like to call us, it's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Or Don Taylor can be emailed as well. It's dawndon@rickemerson.com. Or, if you like, Show Pony, which is another thing that I had to explain to my wife, because it's like she didn't really get a chance to listen to the show and also doesn't find me that amusing at this point. I mean, any sort of entertainment value that I had wore off just like so long ago. I mean, I think she's basically just like, you know, with me out of inertia at this point. Just, she hasn't yet been acted upon by the outside force to the extent that she's willing to just pack up her stuff. So, you know, so she stays. But she didn't really get a chance to tune in all that often. And I was trying to explain the whole Show Pony thing to her. And then I realized that there was just no way to explain it without it sounding crazy. Which, by the way, happens with an astonishing number of things. And I've noticed that because of the rapidity, the speed with which news stories develop now, what with the internet and all, that things go from not existing in the cultural consciousness at all to existing on a fully developed info. You know what stories are like now? Stories are like one of those capsules you'd buy when you were a kid that you drop in the bath and then like little foam dinosaurs would shoot out of them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, they are exactly like that.
It's exactly, it's like, you know, it's like one day, I don't know any Tony Wiener. The next day, Tony Wiener. And it's like he occupies, it's like Rebecca Black.
They used to be more like the submarine or the deep sea diver that you would put the capsule in and he would like, it would dive and then it would go bloop, 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 bloop back up to the surface and then dive and bloop, bloop, very slow and up and down. Now it's like the little foam pellets have become dinosaurs.
In no reality is it like a dipping bird, which doesn't work anyway.
Or a slinky. It's not nothing like a slinky.
Slinky actually functions correctly, though, is the thing. A, I could never get the goddamn diving diver thing to actually... I would just put the thing in the tub and it would just float on the top. And I would put the little capsules in and it wouldn't do anything. And then it would just sink to the bottom and stay there. So in that way, it was exactly like a dipping bird in that it never functioned as advertised. Never. Not once. A slinky at least does what it's supposed to do.
Is it like sea monkeys at all?
No. You know what it is kind of like, though? It's like that submarine you buy for $4.99 and then it turns out it's just made of cardboard. You don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, that I don't know anything about.
No, Dan Hanico knows what I'm talking about right now because he wrote a whole blog entry on it the other day. Getting dangerously off track. Here's what I was going to say. Is it's like a thing. No, it's like the other thing. It's... But in all ways, it's like what happened to me, though, where I was talking to my wife this weekend about something, and my mom's is in town. And so my mom made some observation to me. She said, blah, 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 and that Anthony Weiner was showing everyone his penis. And Lara had no idea what she was referring to. She said, what do you mean Weiner was showing his penis? Because it sort of sounds funny if you don't know the content. And I said, you know, Tony Weiner, the representative. And Lara goes, no, I don't. I have no idea what you're talking about. And I said, you know, the guy in New York with the... You know, the texting and the Twittering and the hey, look at my junk. And she had no idea what I was referring to. And I realized, and it was just like with the Rebecca Black thing when I said, haha, it's Friday, da, 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 Friday. And she said, I don't know what you're doing right there. And I just sent her the Wikipedia link. And I was just like, I'm not going to explain. She goes, no, tell me. And when somebody says, no, tell me, and they have zero knowledge about the thing already, and it's something like Anthony Weiner, or like, remember when it was like every other day Britney Spears was just melting down in some completely bizarre way? And if somebody just said, who's Britney Spears and why is she so interesting to everybody right now? You would have, like, the energy that it would take you, the CPU power that it would take to just explain everything and to bring them up to speed is just not even worth it. What was my point here?
I have no idea.
Nothing is what I
news,
have.
News
show
stories.
Pony.
Show pony, yes.
So I tried to explain a lot of the whole show pony thing, and that's not even that involved of a story, but I finally just said, the show's there. Like, go listen to it. So anyway, you can email Dawn if you like it. It's Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com, or showpony, S-H-O-W-P-O-N-Y, at rickemerson.com. Text box online also. You can reach us via Skype if you like. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype username. It is all one word, Rick Emerson Show.
Or you can send an email to Thomas Gill. And he can scribble something on a note and hand it to us because he's like right here.
Yeah, it's true. If only he had some mechanism installed in his body where he could print it out on some sort of a paper tape.
How do you know he doesn't?
Well, and I was saying, and then we could have a horse just sort of pawed out on the ground like in Morse code to us. All right. By the way, now I'm just being used to ferry messages back and forth. By the way, Thomas Gill, Keelan King says, quote, what up, son? End quote. Just, you know, like in case you were wondering. All right. Can I go home?
Sure.
I'm already just so worn out from this introduction.
I'm kind of tired myself.
Just sapping my will. Well, clearly you haven't eaten enough. Have some more salad.
We can have Thomas Gill do the show for us.
It's just, you know, and then I wouldn't even have to be here.
Yeah.
All right.
He knows how everything works.
It's true. He's really the only one. Here's what's coming up in the next, it doesn't even seem possible, in the next 90 minutes we're going to try to get to all of these things. We've got the penis watch coming up today, snuff watch coming up today. I don't even know who's dead. It's almost like you're killing celebrities Hearst style just so we can report on them.
Here's the thing. This is a death that may not mean much to you, but Cheryl made sure I knew about it. And when I found it, it was like I was being stabbed in the heart.
Is it somebody from Doctor Who?
No.
Okay, because that's my automatic assumption. Is it some... Wait, hold on. Cheryl told you about it, and then you were being stabbed, so the two of you care about this enough.
Yes.
But not
me. Or at least Cheryl knows I care.
But you're not entirely sure that I care. Do I even know who the person is?
You know who the person is because of my talking about it.
Is it one of the guys from the 5 million fingers of Phineas... What's his name? Flingelbert?
No.
That
would be the 5,000 figures of Dr. T, and no.
Is it David Cassidy?
No.
Okay.
It's a woman. You will never guess.
Okay.
I can tell you right now, you would never guess.
All right. So Snuffwatch coming up later on today. Pardon me. Also, Geek Watch. Also, Penis Watch. Mr. Aaron Duran going to be joining us for the Week in Geek here in just a bit. We will recap last night's episode of The Killing, Season 1, Episode 12. And I do believe it is the... Let me just say this. I had these dreams all night about that.
God.
Not just about last night's episode of The Killing, but I had dreams all night about the series itself. And this is how my brain works. It's what a retard I am. So last night, I'm trying to sleep, and I don't want to get off of the whole thing about the episode right now. Pardon me. But last night, I'm trying to sleep, and not only am I dreaming about the episode and turning over the various sort of possibilities various questions raised by last night. But then at one point, I swear to God, and it's like you lose track of time when you sleep, but I swear to you, like, I spent about 20 minutes of dream time, however long it was in the real world. I spent about 20 minutes of dream time in my dream, you understand. This is not in reality. In my dream, I get up and I go to the office and I sit down in front of my MacBook in the office. And then still in the dream, I spend like 25 minutes searching ain'titcool.com to figure out whether it's the penultimate episode or the antepenultimate episode. And then I become really enraged, still in the dream, not unlike in real life, at the search function on Ain't It Cool and how totally freaking useless it is and how you can never find anything. It's like using Oregon Live. There's just no way. You're typing things in and going, killing, penultimate, and just nothing. And then it comes back, you know, Herc has thoughts on the Buffy finale. And you're going, no, that's not what I need. You know, and it's so that in my dream, and then I woke up and I was angry about the search function on Ain't It Cool, like in real life, in bed. I was so angry that I was clenching my teeth and that I had to get up and go to the bathroom and get Advil. So I could come back to bed and go to sleep sans this Ain't It Cool-induced migraine. Anyway, so that's how much that episode last night got into my head, that I was dreaming about it, and then I was dreaming about thinking about it.
I watched it this morning, as I do. I watch it the morning after. And as much as I have enjoyed the show, this is finally reached that point with this episode that I used to get with Lost sometimes, where it's like I hated the fact that I was watching this all by myself because there was no one to talk to about it. I just watched it. I was like, ah! I was just filled with so much, like, you know, it was one of those things where I really totally understood why people like obsessively jump on message boards.
Oh, absolutely.
For TV shows and stuff, because I was just like, it was like, damn it. And the dog's just looking at me and it's like, you're useless to me. And there was just no one to talk to about it.
And Laura watches it 2 weeks behind usually. I mean, I save them all and then she watches them later. Turns out my mom watches it, but of course she's here and didn't have a chance to watch it yet. So I am actually the only person in the house. And as you said, the dogs are no help. Yeah. I mean, they contribute nothing to that. Yeah. Somebody says, first message today. Okay, so last night's The Killing was effing awesome. Exactly how much time should I plan on setting aside for today's recap? I don't know. We will get to it earlier than we normally would. Pardon me, I don't know. What is up with my throat today? But because we have
Gill.
He's brought some sort of a spore into the studio. It's going to be like that episode of The Brady Bunch where I'm allergic to whatever his shampoo or something is. Because
it's Axe body spray.
We have to get to it on time. Today because Greg and Sarah are here, and then also I got to get out to Beaverton to do Outlook Portland today, and then it's a whole thing, and it's a blah, blah, blah.
And then
blah,
you're going
blah,
down to, like, the Tulip Festival or something, too, aren't you?
Well, you know, my mom is... It's family. I mean, they're just everywhere. I mean, they're just, you know... Don't get me wrong, I love my mom and all, but it's just, you know... But it's the thing if your schedule getting thrown off. So my mom was here this weekend and is here today, and then I think leaving tomorrow. So it's like my mom is here... But then it's like some championship wrestling tag team thing, like with the British Bulldogs, where my mom is leaving town tomorrow, and then literally, my mom has gone like an hour and a half, and then my sister, who I don't ever see because she lives in another country, so then she's going to be here tomorrow afternoon, all through tomorrow night,
Mother like avoiding your sister for some reason?
Yeah.
Like she's lamming it out of there 90 minutes early so that they don't have to have some kind of an awkward reacquaintance thing.
You said that. I didn't say that. That's something I wouldn't know anything about. Probably not. No, because my mom, you know, and I know all boys say this, but my mother is a saint and would not consciously avoid her children, even though she has every reason in the world to do so. I mean, let's be honest, because her children are basically just losers. So, I mean, and I'm including myself in that whole equation. So, I mean, really, if there was ever a mother who just, you know, who just like David Berkowitz's mother doesn't have as much reason to avoid her kids as like mine does. But my mother is that rarest of people who really honestly does just see the best in everybody, even in her offspring, where there really isn't a lot of best to be seen most of the time. I mean, really, honestly, I got a brother who deals meth and lives in a school bus. Come on. I mean, which admittedly lowers the bar a lot for me. You know, it's like all I have to basically do is not molest children or shoot anybody in the face, and it's like I am gold.
And seriously, though, what are the odds that you'll do that?
I mean,
fairly low.
Today, pretty low.
Yeah. I mean, it changes week to week, but, you know, right now, fairly low.
So my sister lives in the, she's a godless Canadian, and so she's here tomorrow to fly, I don't know, she's here flying to somewhere else. And so then I get to take her to the airport. And anyway, so my mom leaves tomorrow, and then it's like instantly my sister is here. So it's like everything is just, you know, my whole day is just ruined before it's even begun. But that's tomorrow. Today, though, I have the rest of a sparkling afternoon to look forward to. I don't even know what we were doing here. So we got the Killing Recap coming up. Week in Geek, Geek Watch, Snuff Watch, Penis Watch, Don Taylor Track, and the following headlines for you on this Monday.
Well, police are looking for a person who left their grandmother's ashes at Goodwill. A British man spends the time while his kid's in the hospital snapping naughty photos of ladies at Target. And a pilot is killed after he helps three passengers survive a blimp explosion.
Really?
Yes.
And this is...
plummeting, flaming blimp.
So where is this? Just
this
give
was
it
in
to me
Germany.
A general... In Germany. Wow. Okay.
It was a Goodyear blimp.
They were due, actually.
Yeah.
So instead of sending their stuff over here to blow up.
I mean, when you hear Zeppelin accident, don't you just immediately think Germany?
I really do. I really do. And this is all true. So that's all coming up today. Snuff Watch, Geek Watch, Week in Geek, The Killing, Penis Watch, and all of that and so forth. By the way, just I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. Let's just read just a little bit of this here. Our friend Seamus is actually... started to calculate something every day. It's the TTP, and he says in gaming there's a term called a TTP, which is the amount of time it takes for tools you, the developer, make available to create user generated content. So you know you offer tools, and then the time from which they are first offered to which to the point at which users begin to use those tools to create content, that is your TTP. In our case, to create a penis. So the timed penis is something he's going to be calculating now in every day's program, the time to which the penis is mentioned.
Now, does this count that you mentioned the penis in mentioning his thing about mentioning the penis?
Well, the thing is, I already mentioned it before, though. I already mentioned that. I mentioned the penis watch as part of the tease.
Oh, okay.
He says, today the TTP was 5 minutes. That's for Legion of News, by the way. The TTP, first instance of penis-related comments, 5 minutes. Let's see, and then later, there was one other thing I wanted to mention here before we even began, because there's not, I mean, we have the story itself, which we could get to, but the story itself is probably not as interesting as just sort of the highlights of it, which is that the Lulz guys, you were getting their hack on again over the weekend, so they hacked prawn.com. Which, unsurprisingly, is a highly trafficked website, which has got passwords and emails and whatever, so... So then they're using all the passwords from prawn.com to break into people's Twitter and Facebook accounts because people use the same passwords and, you know, whatever for everything. Then they're just going to out all the porn customers to their friends and family via Facebook and Twitter. This is apparently, by the way, and then they're looking specifically for military personnel that are using prawn.com. Then let's see, what else do we have here? Then they apparently hacked into video game developer Bethesda Softworks and got the data of 200,000 user accounts. And apparently, and then this it's all just so I can use this phrase right here. They have a document that they posted about us where they said, quote, "We smashed into Brink with our heavy artillery Lulz cannons and then decided to switch to ninja mode." So, there you go. That's fantastic.
That's nice.
Also, apparently, says that TEG is in your studios hacking your internet's lulls.
Mm.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Excellent. All right. It is the... I'm sorry. Apparently, TTP is the same in gaming. It is literally the time until a gamer uses the software tools to make a penis.
Ah.
Like with ASCII, except not, you know, from 1972.
Nice.
Okay, fantastic. How was your morning, Dawn, other than the eating and the so forth?
My morning's okay. I'm sort of dealing with the fact that it's like we're living like squatters at the moment because we haven't had any friends help move our furniture in because we were told there were going to be painters coming and painting. And the painters, who I was assured by my landlord, by the way, I even asked him specifically, I said, "So are these like actual professional painters or just guys you have coming in?" "No, they're professional painters," he tells me. And it's 7:30. Well, the guy shows up at like 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon, and I didn't see him, but then Pat talked to me and left. And then he showed up at 7:30 last night, and he's like an 18-year-old kid driving somebody's dry cleaning van.
Fantastic.
And so we're just like, okay, well, we're going to go hide in the bedroom and eat pizza while you do whatever it is you're going to do.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I gave him a piece of pizza, and he was happy. And then I just heard him the entire time talking to somebody in Spanish on speakerphone while he was working, which I guess kept him entertained, so what the hell. But it's like we don't have all of our stuff put together yet, and then there's these things that are going on, like I went to put the drawers back, and the drawers had been taken out and painted in the kitchen, but whoever had taken the drawers out had also unscrewed all of the hardware so that they roll on the rollers. So the drawers, like, don't actually work.
Oh, so they just kind of,
and then they just kind of fall down into the thing.
Okay.
So I took them back out and stacked them back up on the counter. So that happened. And then there's, I noticed at one point, I'm starting to put, like, some weird things together. I got this whole Law and Order kind of thing going on where I talked to the downstairs neighbor, and we're going to have to be, like, we're going to be working out a thing with the utilities because we share utilities.
It's all one bill.
It's all one bill. Because one of the things I've worked out is, I'm not entirely sure this is a legal duplex.
Yes.
So he and I are going to be, we're going to be working out the thing. And I said, yeah, you know, we may end up using more electricity than you do. He's a guy who runs a food cart. He's hardly ever home. He leaves at like 6 in the morning, doesn't come home till 11 o'clock at night. So we're going to work this out. And he said to me something. He said, and I don't know, in retrospect, if he was just trying to lay the foundation for some kind, you know, of an obfuscation, or if he really doesn't know. But he said, the water bill the last few months has been really, really high, and I don't know why. And I said, well, Bo did say that there was a water pressure thing, and he had to do something to fix, get the plumbers in, and do something to the water pressure. He goes, I don't think that that's it. The water bill was really, really high.
So the water bill's really high, and then you're all having to figure out how to divide up one bill that comes to the house collectively.
Well, yeah, so I'm just going, well, I'm not sure why the water bill's high, but we'll see what happens. So I'm doing stuff, and I'm cleaning up some things because there's still a few things around, like from fixing the place and cleaning the place out. He had told me these people he had that were there before me were old college friends of his, and he rented to them, and that they just completely destroyed the place. So like he's ripped out all of the carpeting, and he's put down brand new pergo flooring, and he's painted everything, and it's actually really quite nice. But there's some things around, and like one of them was just this huge metal thing in the dining room. And it looked kind of umbrella-like or something. And I thought it must have been something that was torn out of the kitchen, like an old, you know, oven hood or something like that. And we lifted up and looked at it, and there was a couple of pieces of, like, sort of machinery underneath of it.
Everybody's thinking exactly the same thing I am, by the way.
Yeah, it was a huge industrial grow light.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Just now I was going to do the grow room thing.
Yes.
Yes.
And so I talked to my landlord.
Awesome.
And so I'm just on the phone with him, and I go, so there are a couple of things. Yeah, we need new blinds in the bedroom, which you notice. You know, okay, yeah, and the painter's coming. Is there going to be like a color, or is it all just going to be white? Is this just the primary? He's like, no, it's all just white, and you can do whatever you want. I'm like, okay, that's good. And what about this giant grow light that's in my dining room?
That's for begonias.
And he laughs uncomfortably. He goes, oh, that was that belonged to the people there before you. I'm going to be like selling that on Craigslist. I said, okay. I said, you know, no judgment, but I kind of need it out of my dining room.
Yeah.
Because it's massive. The thing is, you know, you think a grow light thing, I don't know what I thought, but it's like a huge metal umbrella, like 4 feet across.
Oh, yeah. No, that's like industrial size and strength. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is from the guy who, this isn't the guy who lives there now.
No.
Okay.
No.
Is this from the person who lived where you now live?
Yes.
Okay, so this is, so that whoever owned this presumably is now gone.
Yeah, I believe the old college buddies or whoever, that in itself could be some kind of a story, I don't know. But whoever lived there before, who I think got booted out and kind of wrecked the place a bit. Because I also, you know, walking around, there's an awful lot of, like, hooks in the ceiling for hanging things that don't seem really necessary.
Uh-huh.
But it's really a very nice apartment.
Just when Vincent D'Onofrio wants to spin from the ceiling while bathing in the blood of his victims.
So the adventure continues.
Okay, that's great. Here's the little, and by the way, it doesn't really matter to me. I don't care, but it does. I would be of the opinion that if you are just getting one bill for the entire building, that is not actually a legal duplex.
No,
you're just renting a room from somebody, basically.
Yes, basically, we're renting the house, and then there's also the guy downstairs.
Yeah, which doesn't mean that it's not like a legal dwelling. It just means that it's not actually. Well, it wouldn't be a duplex in any event.
Well, I mean, he has his own kitchen downstairs. It's been, the downstairs has been remodeled. into a slightly smaller apartment.
Is there a door leading from one place to the other? Could you walk directly from one apartment to the other without going outside?
No.
Okay, so
Yes, I could technically, because we have stairs that go down, and then I could go... There's a hallway that's been blocked by just using storage, and then I... Yeah, you could go into his place, but we've got a number of doors that we have our own locks and things.
All right.
So
you haven't.
It is a house that was remodeled. So
was your the place where you're living now, like your actual living space? So you're thinking that was the actual grow room itself, like it wasn't elsewhere in the building?
No, I believe that the upstairs area that these people were in, I believe. They were using it as some sort of a grow facility.
And it was a college friend of his? Have you asked
that's
if that's...
That's what he said.
Have you asked under what circumstances the previous tenant left?
No. I really didn't think that was necessarily my business. He told me that he had bought the house as sort of an investment. He rented it to these friends of his from college. And then he said that they ended up, like, you know, destroying the place and not taking care of it. And that he felt kind of, you know, betrayed by this a bit. And is taught him something about just trusting people just because you went to college with them or something. But that's really all he said.
Okay.
And I think he was thinking maybe Patrick and I both look so, like, middle class or white bread or something that maybe we may not realize that this was a giant grow light.
How is it that you're going to be figuring out exactly how to split the water bill? Do you get two different power bills? Do you get all the utilities? Is it all just one big, like, funnel of debt that comes into the house?
Well, there's going to be an electric bill and a water.
Right, but neither of them is divided, right?
No.
So are you just going to split them up? Is it just going to be like my grandmother and all of her friends at lunch taking like 5 hours to figure out who had like an extra canapé or something?
Well, I figured what I'm going to do is I'm going to just talk to the guy and figure out, you know, and try and get him to be honest about how much he's actually been using. Because the thing is, the guy downstairs, super, super frugal. You know, he owns a food cart. He's literally almost never there. He gets home at night at about 11 o'clock, and he leaves again around 6:30 in the morning. Right now, the general heat for the whole place isn't even on, because he said, and here's another thing, the heat isn't on. And he was saying, well, you know, it gets warm enough in the winter just using the fireplace. And I'm thinking, well, with all those grow lights upstairs, apparently maybe you didn't need to heat the place up anymore.
This is really just going to be endless months of fun. I mean,
yeah.
I can't even, I'm already just anticipating that. I mean, just the innumerable hours of show content that are going to be generated by your new place.
Yes.
I mean, it already makes me happy. That's wonderful. Fantastic. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Mr. Aaron Duran with the Week in Geek. In fact, let's do that now, shall we? Hold on a second. Where's my... There we go. Wonderful. Joining us now from geekinthecity.com with the Weekend Geek, our good friend Mr. Aaron Duran. How are you on this fine Monday, sir? Oh, wait. Have I got it picked up? I believe I do. Wait. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. You know, that's my fault. This is actually...
Actually, I don't have the microphone portion of the phone actually hooked up. That's totally my fault. That is my fault.
No, that is not your fault. Thomas Gill is here. He should have noticed that was not plugged in and pointed that out to you.
That's right. Where are your lulls now?
All right, let's see if this actually... We'll give this yet another try here and see if this actually functions correctly. The second time that I do it... Wait.
I'll just eat some salad while you're doing that.
please do. Just here. Loudly snack on something while I... All right, we'll try that. Anyway, second time. Hello, Mr. Aaron Duran for the famed and all-informative website, geekinthecity.com. Welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, Mark II. Hello, how are you?
Hello, how's it going?
That's totally my fault, my failure on the microphone. How's your life, sir? How are things?
Pretty good. I've just had this raging headache that came out of nowhere. That's always was fun to deal with. But other than that, things are fine.
Excellent. You weren't able to hear actually just now because the microphone was actually not hooked up on this side. You weren't able to hear the saga of Don's new house and new. They're not roommates as such, but they're sort of structure mates.
With the shared wall kind of fun?
Well, it was, it's sort of the...
It's an upstairs-downstairs sort of a thing.
It's a whole, why was the last guy here, asked to leave, or why did he leave? And nobody's really asked, and nobody really knows, but it may have something to do with him seeking alternate forms of revenue while living in Don's house in a way that might have required the installation of massive amounts of lighting equipment and irrigation equipment. Just, you know, FYI. So if you should hear a reference...
Maybe... So there's perhaps like certain smells that have embedded into the walls and flooring of Don's new place.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I haven't noticed that, to be honest. Nothing smells weird.
If you should, I'm just saying, you know, if you should happen to hear like, you know, any sort of reference to that later on, I didn't want you to be confused as to what it might be. So what is going on in the world of...
Whoever moves into Don's old place is going to think it was just a raging sex club, so that's fine.
Well, the difference is that is, in fact, the case.
Yeah.
What is going on in the world of geekery, sir?
Well, when I initially contacted you, it was kind of just a slow week, just with some more comic news coming out of DC and stuff. But now there's been some things that are actually happening in Portland that I found out, so I wanted to talk about. First up, this coming Tuesday at the Hollywood Theater, at 7:30, they're going to be showing another Grindhouse film, the 1983 classic Women's Prison Massacre, a.k.a. Emmanuel Behind Bars.
Is this canon in the Emmanuel series, or is it just was it a thing that was retrofitted to be an Emmanuel film?
It is considered the last of the Black Emmanuel series, which is where Emmanuel went bad, I guess. And God, it's awful.
I have to tell you that the Emmanuel films were something that those always seemed to be on, you know, like Showtime or Cinemax or the Movie Channel or something at about 4 a.m. when I was, I don't know, like 16 through about 20. You know, you'd be like at somebody's house, or it's like if you lived someplace where there was cable, like those were always on, and it was like the high watermark of made for TV of like softcore porn, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. But I think this is an entry in that series that has eluded me this far. Why the retitle to Women's Prison Massacre, other than the fact that it's, you know, clearly a fantastic title?
I think that was just it, because it came out in 1983, which is pretty much when the slasher genre in the United States had really picked up. And by then, the Emmanuel brand had kind of died in the United States. It was still big in Europe, especially like in Spain and Italy. But in the United States, like, the Emmanuel brand was kind of gone, because by then, by 1983, you know, like hardcore porn was getting relatively easy to get a hold of. But the slasher genre was really picking up. So a lot of these like pseudo erotic films got retitled with slasher names that made no sense at all for the movie.
And so that's going to be at the Hollywood Theater this coming weekend?
Yeah. This Tuesday.
Oh, I'm sorry, this Tuesday. So actually, as in tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Tomorrow at the Hollywood Theater.
Is it like a one-night-only kind of a thing?
I think it is, yeah. It's a one-night-only. He's got, once again, he got a hold of, like, the original print, so.
Stupid family screws me again. And, of course, it's not even just, like, it'd be one thing if it was like, well, my mom was here or something, because, first of all, my mom probably wouldn't. My mom probably, you don't want to take your mom to see an Emmanuel film, because that's just years and years and years of therapy that's not going to do any good anyway. But my sister's coming into town, and she's like, it's like my mom and my sister did this weird, like, Freaky Friday thing as they passed. Like, there was some sort of event horizon where they swapped personalities. Because growing up, and I mentioned this a lot in Bigger Than Jesus, my mom was very, 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 very hyper-Christian, very, like, ultra-religious. I mean, like, nearly Pentecostal in her Christianity. And then she just... coincidentally, around the same time that my dad just, you know, was no longer in the scene, she got much better, and she now is no longer like a crazy person. But then my sister, who growing up was just like this big, like unwashed, like pot smoking, you know, hippie with a map of Middle Earth on her bedroom wall, my sister just became unbelievably religious. I mean, like the whole full on, like, crazy screaming born again thing. And so she'll be in town tomorrow, so the idea of me just either bringing her along or just leaving her at home for a while if I go to see an Emmanuel film is probably not, it's probably
so
not
you don't
a thing I'm going
to take
gonna
her be. To this powder keg of smoldering sex and violence.
No, I think
it's ready to explode.
I think sometimes with siblings you have, you know, sometimes there's siblings where you can just, you know, you can go do social things together, and then occasionally there are siblings with whom you can't, you know, social activities must be sort of, you have to circumscribe what it is you're doing, and this is the latter category. Well, that's fine. There's always the internet for that sort of a thing.
That's true.
You said that there was much happening in the way of comic news. So what is out there? What's on the horizon?
Well, there's two things. Again, it's coming out of DC, because like I mentioned last week, DC is relaunching everything at issue one in September, and the two big pieces of news that broke out of that today is that in this new DC universe, Superman will have been the absolute first superhero to ever exist in the DC universe. And unlike the Superman we kind of know of right now, he's not going to be very well trusted by the public. They're not going to know what to make of this new Superman. And in a strange kind of twist of fate, He's also going to be going back to some of his original roots when Siegel and Shuster first created him, in that the Superman back in the 1930s had no problem pushing a landlord off a building if he felt like he was raising the rent too much on tenants and forcing tenants to live on the street. Superman was actually quite the socialist when these two young little Jewish boys first created him, and he leapt, you know, tall buildings in a single bound.
We've talked about this a little bit, the idea that the softening of superheroes over the years, like the fact that Batman, I think if you told me that Batman like actually used to full on just like kill people if he felt they had it coming.
If he felt like there was no choice. Yeah, the earliest issues of Batman, he didn't do it very often because he didn't like to do it because life was sacred, you know, even back then in his comics. But the early Superman, you know, drawing inspiration from the Shadow, the earliest incarnation of Superman is he carried a .45 in his utility belt along with everything else.
So there was
Needed to put him down, he did it.
And it was the same with the Joker too. So it was not just Batman, but the Joker. Actually, it wasn't until the Cesar Romero Joker of the '60s that he became a watered down sort of cartoonish villain. He was very, very sinister. But I didn't really know that it was the same with Superman. I didn't know that he had been the personality wise that he had been modeled much differently in the early days.
Yeah, no, I mean, he wasn't sadistic or vicious, you know. He'd always try to kind of throw the bad guys in jail and whatnot. But there would be on some occasions where, you know, the Siegel and Shuster, you know, writing Superman, drawing Superman, if they wrote this, you know, this fat cat, you know, landlord, you know, or building owner, if he was really irredeemable in their eyes, Superman would throw him off the building, just shove him off. You know, this is the people's building now, and, you know, you all have fair rent and, you know, bread and milk and cheese for everybody. Yeah,
Superman was the Red Menace.
He really was.
All right, then.
Yeah.
And so are they...
And then the other...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, let's say the other bit of news is coming out that's actually generating a lot of controversy right now for DC is they've introduced a new character called Batwing, who is the Black Batman of Africa, which is insulting on so many levels.
Yeah, David Walker has a piece on his Darius Logan site, a blog about this, and he just mentioned on
Facebook. He and I have been chatting back and forth on this one, yeah.
Yeah, he just posted to Facebook that I guess DC stands for Dumb Crackers.
Now, forgive me. Now, why is it is he literally, when you say he's the Black Batman of Africa, I mean, he's not lit like a franchise, but I mean, it's like that's how they're describing the superhero.
Well,
what's the issue?
In DC Comics, the way it's it's happening now, and when they relaunch number one, Batman is actually a franchise. Batman is appointing basically other Batman throughout the world. And it's been kind of an interesting and fun story. The concept of Batman is no longer just, you know, anchored into Gotham, where there's crime. There's going to be a Batman. So criminals literally have nowhere to hide. But they've all been kind of their own, you know, their own characters, not necessarily with the name Bat in them or what have you. What's the most insulting about this is the character is called Batwing, which is a euphemism for, you know, sagging male sections.
I have no idea what we're talking about right now. Dawn?
No.
You know all about sagging male sections.
I thought I did.
Hold on, Thomas Gill was just doing something with his hands. He's doing a pair of spectacles with his. Oh, not spectacles, but something that rhymes with spectacles.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
What testicles are referred to as a bat wing?
Yeah, when they get all sweaty and saggy, they're called having bat wings.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I really regret going
the
out
more
into
you
the,
know.
The thin ice of this conversation.
But the thing that's mainly insulting is that they're just calling him the Black Batman. And that he's going to defend or protect, you know, he's going to fight crime in all of Africa, because Africa is a country, as we all know, not with.
Of course, it's not a massive continent with a huge landmass.
And it's also a thing of like introducing a black superhero, but then he's in Africa. You can't have a black superhero, you know, in the United States.
Well,
he's going to be where all the black people are.
Right, and to make matters even worse, the person writing it, Judd Winnick, said that he wishes DC would pay for him to spend a month in the Congo so he could immerse himself in the culture to better write the character.
Is it also just because they're just calling him, like, basically the Black Batman? Is it sort of like when we all call Ernie Hudson the Black Ghostbuster? Is that he's just being treated as, like, an adjunct, you know, as sort of a spinoff of a white superhero, as opposed to being his own?
I think the big... I think the big complaint is that people actually want more diverse characters in these comics. The thing that angers people is that when these companies do that, instead of just putting a black superhero anywhere in the world, of course, there's only two places black characters can exist within the world of comics. That is either Africa or the ghetto of any city in the world. They can't live anywhere else and fight crime anywhere else. They have to either go back to the motherland or they have to live in the ghetto. And that's the part that I think readers are just kind of sick and tired of, and the companies still now, haven't caught
on gonna,
yet.
If they're going to make him Africa-centric, I mean, so is this going to be like when Batman went to Thailand to fight child prostitution? Is he going to be like actually battling genocide and AIDS? Or is he?
No, probably not. He's going to fight robot gorillas and all that kind of dumb crap. Yeah, no, he's not actually going to do things that would actually help improve the quality of life in these countries in Africa. He's going to tackle issues that they tackle in superhero books.
So it's not going to be like Batman versus Massacre in Darfur or something.
They're not going to do that. I don't know if that's a topic that a superhero comic can tackle, but they're not going to come near that. No, he's going to battle robot gorillas and aliens that were buried in the jungles for millennia before they rise back up.
The biggest problem in Africa right now is robots of all kinds. It doesn't matter, really. Toucans. Here's a dumb question.
Secret raptors that have been hiding in the jungles.
So when they're rolling out this, and this is going to be a standalone book, right? In other words, this isn't like a mini series as related to Batman. It's going to be its own thing. Is this being rolled out just for sale in the United States, or is it being rolled out for sale in other countries around the world? So, in other words, is this something that they're thinking they're actually going to be selling to African countries? Because that might actually give some sort of underpinning to it if it was for marketing purposes. If the thing, we're going to sell this, in African countries, and so therefore we want it to be based there.
Well, the bulk of physical publishing of comics happens within North America. And then once you leave North America, there's specific companies that do nothing but reprint international versions of these comics. However, these are all also going to be digital comics, and I don't think there's any kind of rules about keeping those within the United States. So those will be global issues. I mean, anyone who has, an iPad or any kind of, digital reading device can theoretically go on to dccomics.com and download these books. So, but I don't think it's hard for me to imagine a bunch of people in the DC and by default Warner Brothers boardroom sitting around a table and thinking, well, how can we get that much needed Congo dollar or that Ethiopian comic book dollar? Well, let's just send him a black Batman and it'll be fine. We'll make tons of money that way.
I don't even really know what this question means, but somebody has typed, "Pleased to be asking, is Black Panther still on The Man Without Fear?"
Yes. For now.
So there you go. Whatever that question means, it's been answered. Yes, for
but
now.
But pretty soon he's going to evolve into the Patriot Without Fear. They're changing his costume to look like Black Panther but have Captain America's colors. It's all very confusing. Black Panther is a Marvel Comics character introduced about 40 years ago. And he is the prince of this fictional, or the king of this fictional country in Africa called Wakanda, and he's a early, almost founding member of the Avengers. He's actually a legacy character for Marvel. He's been around a long time. He's a pretty cool character, but unfortunately, as is the case with many minority superhero characters, they never really know what to do with them. So every 5 years or so, they switch him up. They stick him in another country. They change his background. It's not like it's Steve Rogers' Captain America where he's, blonde hair, blue eyes, and give him powers, and he runs for 60 years.
Are there any Asian superheroes who don't do, like, say, martial arts or have some kind of specifically sort of racist kind of, backward oriental kind of a vibe to them?
Don't be silly, Don.
I'm just wondering.
No, actually, no.
Yeah. Okay.
Not that I can think of the top of my head. I mean, there aren't that many Asian superheroes to begin with, because, of course, most of them are villains because they're not to be trusted.
Yes, their superpower is cunning and craftiness, Don.
Well, how about Latino superheroes?
Aaron?
There are within DC Comics, there are two. There is Jaime Reyes, who is the Blue Beetle. Fantastic book written by your buddy John Rogers from... Yeah,
I actually, I have that book at home, actually, which is, and it's fantastic.
It's a really good book. And then a character named Renee Montoya, who first started in the Batman comics as a detective, as just a Gotham PD detective, but is now the costume superhero known as The Question. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. You know, they should
Marvel
do is...
Marvel had one called The White Tiger, but he got shot in the face, so he's not a... He's not really a Latin superhero
that
anymore.
As happens.
They should just create some sort of amorphous, you know, they should create some sort of Vin Diesel-like superhero of just questionable and vague ethnicity that they can just use anywhere, you know? That they get like sort of like a typo negative of superheroes. They can just drop him into any culture and he'll just fit in, you know? He just looks like whoever happens to live there. Or how about this? Because don't you get the feeling, I mean, and I don't know a lot about the comic world, but don't you get the sense that like a lot of these superheroes are just... It's like they're just kept in some sort of Marvel or DC version of cryosleep, and it's behind glass. You're saying like break in case of important, you know, social theme related storyline, you know, or break in case of congressional investigation into a depiction of, you know, a cultural diversity in comic books, and then it's like they bring out the black guy and send him to Africa to, you know, to do something black. That's like you can see that conversation just taking place around a boardroom. They go, I don't know, is there any way that we can, I don't know, I mean, do we have to create a whole new, can we just have Superman like black up somehow? And he goes, no, don't say black up. Well, you know what I mean, do something sort of Negro-like, you know, that's good though for right and justice. And they go, I don't know, that seems hard. Don't we have, what about Black Lightning? Isn't he like in a vault somewhere? Hold on a second. And then they go and they open
Let's get him.
Yeah, they go and they open up the drawer and there's Black Lightning and they bring him out and then they send him down to like, you know, but here's the other thing is that, and this is again just based on the limited amount of knowledge that I have of the comics world, it seems to be the thing where it's almost, it's like you can always just see the white man trying way too hard. Like I have observed many times that in every courtroom drama that's written by a white person, it's like the black guy must be a judge, always. Which is fine, except that you can tell that it's there because it's just this weird white overcompensation, where it's like, well, we're writing a courtroom drama, and who will the black judge be? Let's see. Oh, it's going to be, it's going to be great. Ossie Davis. Great, we're done. And so it is a lot of times with non-white superheroes, where it's like they're not just, you know, they're not just fighting small crime or petty problems or trying to stop, like, you know, like the Penguin from taking over, you know, like whatever city hall. It's always like they've got to go and like stop like a child sex ring somewhere in the heart of darkest, like wherever, Blagrovia.
That's right.
So it's it sort of calls attention to itself by the way it is handled, in my opinion. I say, speaking for all minorities.
Speaking for all, as the white man should.
Yes, it's my place,
Aaron. It's just really hard. When you're someone like me that I have, a genuine passion and love for this industry, both as a consumer and, you know, starting up creator, but then to see them screw up so many times over and over and over again, you just kind of want to like grab the screen or, you know, throw the book in the air and say, are you guys friggin' listening? Are you paying attention? No, you're not.
Clearly,
buying the book because I still love these characters. And, you know, and that's the damnable misery of it, is that even though they'll keep getting it wrong, you know, hiring the same people to do the same thing over and over again, I'll still be there every Wednesday because I love these characters and I hope eventually something will get better.
Clearly a job for Hooper X. You've got to get him on the case.
Yeah.
All right.
Rage.
Find out more at geekinthecity.com. That is geekinthecity.com. Mr. Aaron Duran. Thank you, my friend. We will have speaks with you next Monday. There you go.
Cool. Thank you.
Aaron Duran, ladies and gentlemen, from geekinthecity.com. Excellent. Wonderful. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll take a break here in a few. We'll come back. Still to come, let's see. We've got, all of our watches. We've got Penis Watch, Snuff Watch, Geek Watch, our recap at The Killing. By the way, before we do anything else, though, please now, Dawn, to go to rickemerson.com/pictures. Go to Visual Aids for June 13th. I didn't get a chance to talk about this at the beginning of the show because we ran so terribly over time with all the salading and so forth. But this is a picture taken from inside my living room window. And so I posted something on Twitter over the weekend. Where I it was on Saturday morning, where my mom was there, and so my mom and a lot of, they were up before I got up. But when I got up, it was still the same way, where there were dozens of squirrels all over my street, all over the little lawn area in front of my house, and then all the way up to and including the front porch itself. And the thing is, there's always squirrels in the neighborhood. I mean, there's trees around, so there's squirrels, and that just sort of goes without saying. And sometimes you'll see them running across the street or whatever. But it was like there was some sort of, I felt like Suzanne Plachet or something. It was like they were just everywhere. Where I walked at the, and up to opening the front door of my home and stepping out just to sort of, you know, to, I think it was letting the dogs out or whatever, which I soon realized I couldn't do because then Max just went berserk. But I walked and there were squirrels actually sitting on the wooden railing that separates our front porch from our garden, which is like 2 feet in front of the front door. And they were just, and the thing is, they were completely without fear. Like I opened the front door and literally closer to me than you are now, they were just sitting on wooden railing and I swung up at the door like, here I go. And I opened up there and they just sat there and just stared at me. Just their beady little evil black unblinking eyes. And then I looked and then I turned and they were actually on the steps of the porch where I was standing. So like, I don't know, maybe 2 feet from me. And at that point, you know, Max just is a thing where Max saw the squirrel, and you know how dogs are. They just assume that the whole place belongs to them. So Max then bolts after the squirrel, which runs. This is just a little side note about how dumb my dog is. So Max is chasing the squirrel across the yard, all the way through the garden, up to this sort of wire fence. The squirrel, in what really is like an impressive display of athleticism, leaps the fence in one single jump. Max, of course, just smashes into the fence face first like an idiot and then doesn't realize that the same thing will happen again. So then he rears back and charges again and tries to go through the fence. I mean, he's lucky he didn't dice himself like an eggplant. It just makes no sense at all. So I had to like take him out in a leash every time. You know, I had to take him out for the rest of the day, even though he couldn't get out. It was just to stop him from just going nuts. But they were all day Saturday. There were squirrels everywhere to the point that there were people up and down the street just standing on the porches of their home with cameras photographing the squirrels everywhere. And they would be running across the street in groups of like 8 or 9 or 10.
Wow.
I have no idea. And so then this was actually yesterday. So I thought it was like done and over. This is, so if you look at this photo, this is at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 13th. So that's taken, it actually looks smaller and further away than it is. I mean, that's me like about a foot away from that squirrel just on the other side of the glass. But I've done the thing with the camera of holding it back a little bit.
And he's posing with a very adorable expression
on
his face.
And he's just staring in the window at me.
Yeah.
So that's like where I'm just going about my daily business and turn around and, ah! And there's a squirrel literally doing everything but just pressing his face up against the glass like I'm on display in a Werther's candy store. Seriously, it just makes no... We've lived in this place for 5 years, and I have never seen anything like this.
He definitely has that look on his face, like he's looking inside and going, "Oh yes, this will do."
We
just have to get rid of the humans.
It's escalated even further. Lara just sent me a photograph about an hour ago of. So now it's become some sort of weird Mexican standoff where Max is actually now up on the sofa staring out this same window at the squirrel who is staring in. So they're on now opposite sides of. So it's like Hard Target with Jean-Claude Van Damme. We're on opposite sides of the glass and they're going to be shooting it out at any moment. So my only theory, and I don't really know if this is true or not, I have no way to prove this. My only theory is that they either cut down or did substantial trimming on a whole grove of trees somewhere near my neighborhood and that the squirrels just descended on us as like the nearest place. And that there just are more squirrels now than there are trees to hold them, and that's why they're everywhere. Or that there was just some squirrel alert sent out somewhere that it finally was warm enough for an extended period of time, except I've never seen that happen on any other day in spring of any other year, unless it, like this long, protracted period of coolness we had just resulted in a lot of sort of...
Or it could just be another sign of the end times.
I don't know. Or maybe somebody suggested that the
locusts,
crows are
squirrels.
Actually training. Yeah. Yeah. That the crows and the locusts are training the squirrels to do their bidding. That they're sort of they're the shock troops.
Yeah.
You know, that they're the pawns coming across the board at you.
They are frighteningly clever.
It's very weird. I mean, the whole thing is just strange. It's just not one of those, it's just not one of those things you really anticipate when you're just sort of lounging around in your living room. You look out and there's just squirrels just peering in the window at you.
Yeah, I saw a squirrel that had been hit by a car on the highway once. And there was another squirrel standing over that squirrel. And I swear to God, he was like going through his pockets.
Avenge me.
I think he was like looking to see if he had anything on him. He was stealing his wallet or something. I mean, they're evil.
Well, they were doing the thing that like you get these groups of like 5 and 6 squirrels and they were doing the thing that the crows do where they will actually go. They were going down the street and then as traffic would approach, they would duck underneath parked cars on the side of the road. And clearly one guy was like, which is clearly like it's all clear. And then they would run out. And then he would be like, don't dive to the trench. And then they would seek cover because here comes another air raid of, like a Buick rolling down the street or something. It's the idea when you see animals working together like that. By the way, just
Plus, they have like creepy little hands, and they can hold things and grab things and bite through things.
As Beverly Cleary said about Ralph S. Mouse, he has cunning little paws.
Yes.
Let's see. Final note here, and then we'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. Speaking of, they work in pairs, and they team up together against man. So, you know what I watched last night that my mother had not seen for like 20 years, and that my wife, because she's a terrible American, had never seen, is Jurassic Park.
Ah.
Because it's one of those things that, like, during the whole, like, period when we were first together and you sort of, you know, make, you know, like, what kind of movies do you like and what kind of food do you enjoy and whatever. And it never occurred to me to ask if Laura had seen Jurassic Park because, you know, like, why would you not have seen Jurassic Park? It's like you almost had to actively, like, you had to leave the country and avoid seeing Jurassic Park intentionally somehow. But she never had. And so it was just, it had been, because I wanted her to watch the riff tracks that accompanies it. And that's when I found out that she'd never, she's like, oh yeah, well, I should see that movie anyway. And I said, you mean see it again? She's like, no, I should see Jurassic Park. I never have. And so it was like on this list of things we wanted to watch. So so last night, my mom just wanted to stay in and take it easy. And she said, she didn't put it this way, but she said something to the effect of like, do you have something that has a lot of gunfire and explosions? And I said, well, I've got Jurassic Park. It's sort of like that. And so we watch it. And, you know, and it's probably been, I don't know, 7 or 8 years since I've seen Jurassic Park. And the things that don't work about it now are the things that didn't work about it when it first came out, which is basically just that I tire of the kids really quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids are really, and even they're not as bad as I remember. And I think it's because I've seen so many movies with terrible, terrible children and child actors and child characters. So even they're not as bad as I remember them being. But I got to tell you, with the possible exception of the kids and maybe one or two other small things, that movie still works astonishingly well.
And I like it more now than I did when it first came out. When I first saw it, I was going through my previously discussed anti-Spielberg phase that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing it and just really disliking it. Just thinking, just going into it, I went into it with a bad attitude. It's like, this will be Spielberg and he's going to be manipulating me and it's going to be the big fake dinosaur. You know, and plus, I had listened to the book on tape when we were moving to
Oregon. Book.
And it was awful. It was just awful. And so I was just like, ugh. And so I ended up, I psyched myself into really not liking it very much when I first saw it. And I just saw it again less than 6 months ago. And it was the first time I'd actually watched it from start to finish in years. And yeah, it is a much, much better movie than I ever gave it credit for.
Now, do you not like Michael Crichton in general?
My opinion of Michael Crichton is that he has terrific ideas for books and that he's brilliant at doing the research and stuff to lay his groundwork for the book. Any of his books, like Jurassic Park, the first like quarter of that book where he's talking about the science is really interesting. Same thing with Congo. Any of those books, when he's talking at the beginning of the book where he's laying out all of the stuff he did research on to come up with the plot is really good.
Where it's still just a Bill Bryson book.
Yeah, and then people start talking.
Yeah.
And he can't write characters or situations to save his damn life. He's a terrible writer.
That is kind of my, and I know this makes me a bad guy, but that's kind of my thing with Tom Clancy, is that I feel like Tom, and I know that people love Tom Clancy books, and I love the idea of all of Tom Clancy's books. See also Chuck Palahniuk, by the way. Great. Where Chuck Palahniuk is great on the hook, he's great on the gimmick. He's really great. What if you had a guy who, and then he met a girl who, and then he had a strange job where he, and then at the end there was a supernatural twist where, you know, and then you go, that's great. Get someone else to write that. Tom Clancy is sort of like Crichton in that Tom Clancy has all of the great sort of... Tom Clancy is like Arthur... Is Arthur Haley the airport guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he has this great like showing you how stuff works and how things operate, which is really wonderful. And I have to confess, I am kind of a Michael Crichton fan, but I knew what you're saying, where it's like it shifts from exciting to like cardboard characters kind of moving around and doing exciting things because the story requires it like at about halfway through.
Yeah, he's an interesting... I think it's one of those things where I think... The difference is, I think he's an interesting storyteller, and he's good at coming up with really interesting ideas, but he was never a strong writer. Never a very good writer at all. And that would always take me out of the story, because I'd find myself, just the clunkiness of the prose would just be killing me while I was trying to finish the book.
No, I can see how that's true. The thing about Michael Crichton, too, is like his books all just prove irresistible to filmmakers, because they all have the high concept. They all have the great idea of the writer. And I don't want to say that all of them are terrible, but I mean, really, like an astonishing number of Michael Crichton-based films are awful.
Well, I think it's kind of like, you know, to compare it, it's kind of like the Twilight films. I mean, ultimately, you're going to get back to the source material. And if the source material is weak, you know, there's only so much you're going to be able to do with that unless you just basically trash all of it and start from scratch, which some filmmakers do with certain books.
Right.
But if you're going to try and stay, you know, true to the, because some things like, you know, Congo is a good example. Congo, when you actually see it as a movie, you realize it's not even a very good story.
Right.
You know, it's just he came up with like the talking monkey and like all of the interesting ape stuff. And then he gets you to the jungle and the actual story starts and it's awful.
It's like he just wanted it's like he was just seeking a scientist who's seeking mechanisms by which to force feed you scientific knowledge. And he figured that if you wrapped it in some sort of an adventure with Sharon Stone at the bottom of the ocean or whatever, that like you'd go, oh, that's great. That's wonderful. And then he would trick you into learning things. Which I guess he kind of does. I have, watching Jurassic Park again last night, a couple of things. One, the initial, that whole sequence when the two trucks are parked by the T-Rex compound and the storm has started, still is fantastic. I mean, that really just has like every ounce of the punch it originally did. Also because Spielberg does really well what Stephen King does, which is he spends the whole first act just gradually moving people into place and just, I think it's what Stephen King described as just slowly putting people in a room and then locking all the doors. And then the second act is then where he just lets in monsters.
Well, it's also Jurassic Park does kind of follow that the better Stephen King plot lines, too, that in part of the moving people into place, you get to know the people.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter why the bad thing happens. It all that matters, because once you've figured out who the people are and you've found someone in the story to relate to, once the horrible things start happening to the people, you don't have to spend too much time on the whys and the wherefores.
The other reason that I think Jurassic Park really works, and I never put this together until last night, is the dialogue in Jurassic Park, and just especially the comedic dialogue where like they're using laugh lines in places where it shouldn't work. There's the sequence where Jeff Goldblum has been knocked unconscious and they come and they pull the reeds off him or whatever, and he goes, "Remind me to thank John for a lovely weekend." You know, and it shouldn't.
Goldblum is great in that movie.
He's great, and it's like, and the one-liners are all really like, as they're running, they're leaving the museum at the end and everything has just gone to hell in a handbasket, and what's his name is Grant is jumping in and he goes, "Upon closer consideration, I've decided to revoke my endorsement of your theme park." You know, and it's and it shouldn't be funny. And you're like, well, why does this work? Why does this comedy work when in other movies it would just thud? And here's the answer. And I'm convinced of this. And there's probably no way to prove this unless it's extant. This unless it's been written about somewhere. Upon watching Jurassic Park again last night, I would be willing to bet you my bottom dollar that is where Sorkin first started ghosting for Spielberg, because Aaron Sorkin wrote the dialogue for Schindler's List, and which is a thing that's not really known, but is a fact.
I could definitely see that, though, now that you mentioned that.
And
the movie
immediately preceding Schindler's List was Jurassic Park. And so Sorkin wrote on Schindler's List, and I can't imagine that Schindler's List would be the first time that Spielberg would try an untested writer with his material, untested by him at least. So I would be willing to bet, watching the dialogue and the way that the dialogue flows and some of the specific lines they use, and there is specifically, there is a sequence where Goldblum is riding along. This is, I guess, that's sort of just a film wankery that only like five people care about. But there's this sequence where Goldblum is riding along in that automated truck, and Laura Dern and what's his name?
Sam Neill
have gotten out. And suddenly Goldblum is alone in the truck, and he goes, "Oh, there you go. That's an example of chaos there. I mean, who could have imagined that they would have gotten out of the truck and that I'd be here alone and that I'd be the last one in here talking to myself? I would never have known that here I would be speaking to no one." And the gag of characters in a Sorkin production being left alone in a room where they then talk aloud to themselves and at the end of it all say, "And here I am talking to myself." That's a thing that recurs in everything he has ever done. Every Sorkin movie or series ever made, I swear to you, has a sequence where a character ends up the last person in a room and then concludes their whole monologue by noting, "And here I am talking to myself out loud in a room with nobody." That's a bad sign. That's omnipresent. And so that was the moment where I went, aha. And then I looked at the timeline, and it was right after Jurassic Park that Spielberg recruited him to write the dialogue for Schindler's List. Mm. So I think that's another reason, and that really wasn't even the reason I brought this up, but I think that's another reason that movie works. But it's still good and still really intense in moments, even though I know, you know, that everybody more or less, you know, makes it out okay, except for the couple of red shirt characters who, you know, are sort of hosed to begin with. And it's got Sam Jackson, so, yeah. You know, so there's that. All right. We should do this. We'll come back. We've got Snuff Watch, Geek Watch, Penis Watch, and a recap of last night's awesome episode of The Killing. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. By the way, somebody emailed and asked about Ryan White. He's going to be joining us next Monday. So he was... Gone the last two weekends, the last two Mondays, rather, on vacation. Back today, but we're not running behind. I'm running a little short today, and also he apparently is deadly ill. So we're going to pick things up next Monday, as opposed to trying to cram a whole month of discussion into, you know, into our... into A, our compressed time frame, and B, his apparently... This is that music bed that has the horse in it. Which is good, because I was just going to make a sort of a reference to a phlegmatacular kind of noise that would be coming out of him, because apparently he's ill.
That was
okay.
It.
Hold on. Should I note this right here? I'm just going to flag this music bed. Music bed number 28 has horse. And then it ends suddenly.
Oh, God.
All right. That's wonderful.
Now we...
Okay, that's great. Excellent. At the news desk, ladies and gentlemen, it is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
That's great. All right, here's your Geek Watch for... why would that even be in the song? Like, why...
know.
At what point have you run out of enough samples and ideas that you just decide just to get the whinnying of a farm animal in the background?
I don't know if you saw that, but we announced we're doing the Geek Watch, and Thomas Gill did a jaunty little dance.
Really?
Yes.
Excellent.
That's fantastic. Excited.
Here's your Geek Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on this.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Well, we have two stories in today's Geek Watch. In the first, we're announcing that after 73 years, Superman is getting some new clothes. DC Comics has said the iconic American superhero is losing his Speedo, getting some new boots. The series, which hit its record-breaking 900th issue in April, will also restart at issue number one. The LA Times reported that Scottish writer Grant Morrison and artist Ralph Rags Morales will be behind the new incarnation. Superman's fans are mixed on his new outfit. Some say the suit is a travesty and a money-making ploy.
Does anybody really say the suit is a travesty?
I'm sure they do.
And do they have any sense of proportion at all in any part of their lives?
Others say they're excited to see a new artist and celebrated writers reboot the series.
What is it? What is the nature of the clothing change exactly?
I guess he's getting the little red panties are going away and the boots.
Okay.
I guess so, you know.
But I mean, and here's when I say that then they have any sense of proportion. It's not like I don't have disproportional anger or outrage about things. I do constantly all the time about everything. Except that this is something that's already happened like dozens of times. Like,
yeah.
Haven't they changed... I mean, isn't that the thing with, I guess I'm thinking of Spider-Man under Todd McFarlane, but I mean, I think Superman has had, I mean, I think he's had sort of like a different take on his clothing, I mean, from time to time, depending on the artist that's doing it.
And he has different outfits. I mean, you know, he's got his outer space Superman outfit and his going someplace frozen Superman outfit.
Is there an outer space Superman outfit?
Maybe I'm thinking of Batman.
I think
never mind.
Thinking
of Batman's outfits.
Yes. Possibly Night Owl. Yes.
Maybe.
All right.
Superboy, the Justice League, and Wonder Woman are also changing their wardrobes. And then when the reboots hit the stores in September, all the new issues will also be released digitally on the same day.
Do we ever figure out exactly how it is that they're going to keep track of? You know, they're gonna keep those issues distinct from one another.
No, I think they're just gonna have to go. Yeah, Wonder Woman number 37, version 2,
and
numbers the new number 26.
And the guy will say,
something.
No, not you know, not the new one, but you know, the old one or whatever.
Yeah, something.
So, all right.
And then from Britain, a worried member of the public has forced the Leicester City Council to admit that it is unprepared for a zombie invasion. The authority received a Freedom of Information request, which said provisions to deal with a zombie attack were poor. The concerned citizen said the possibility of such an event was one that councils should be aware of. Lynn Wyeth, head of information governance, said, "We've had a few wacky ones before, but this one did make us laugh." The Freedom of Information Act allows the right of access to recorded information held by public authority. Ms. Wyeth said she was unaware of any specific reference to a zombie attack in the council's emergency plan. However, some elements of it could be applied if the situation arose. Other submissions to the council have included records for requests of paranormal activity and haunted buildings within the city. Ms. Wyeth said, to you it may seem frivolous and a waste of time, but to different people, it actually means something.
By the way, does it seem to you that like this is one of those things that seems to be occurring so frequently in terms of just cultural dissemination and also like the sort of serious or quasi-serious embrace by government, that it makes you wonder exactly what microbe or germ has been released within the last year or so accidentally that they're trying to preface for the you know, for the onslaught of?
That's making all the dolphins wash up dead on shore and the squirrels go crazy.
There's just something that's gone bad somewhere, and that it hasn't quite reached pandemic proportions yet. But they're just trying to like trying to sort of just passively get us in the mindset to be prepared for whatever that is.
I think so. I mean, you know, they keep. No, it's not like global warming that's causing all of the crows to just fall from the sky dead. And for your neighborhood to be swarming with squirrels.
By the way, are we still in the Geek Watch here?
Yes.
Then everybody should go to rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 13th. By the way, I can thank Seamus for these. So these are pictures from E3. One of the, they're all three of them are great. Two of them are the same person, different angles, but all three of these pictures are great. One of them for different reasons. And he talks about he sent me a whole article about and links to various pictures of these so-called booth babes, which are just, you know, these girls that like video game and technology companies hire to put on something like embarrassing and, you know, and barely covering and to stand in front of, you know, like whatever, like, you know, Tekken 12 or whatever, some game or whatever they're putting out. And most of them are just ridiculous and just sort of insulting to everybody, to the women, to the customers, to people. He did send me photos of this girl who is she's both Harley Quinn and the Joker sort of merged into one. And
I
she's
love her.
Freaking hot.
I love her.
How much is that? He actually, so here's the thing. He sent me a link to all of the, like, the hundreds of photos. And he said, by the way, I'll do you the favor of linking to the only pictures you really need to see. And it was the two of this girl.
She's great.
How great is she? So she does appear, and I don't know this definitively, she does appear to be, though, both the Joker and Harley Quinn. And I guess she is there for a new game called Gotham City Imposters. So that's what she is. She's at the booth for Gotham City Imposters.
Wow.
And then the other photograph is just of this guy. And I don't even really know what I don't even really know what these girls are for. The girls are pimping something or other. Some sort of, I don't know, like an energy drink or a video game or some, you know, like a handheld something or other. And
yeah, somebody should have told them that yes, showing off the boobs is important, but both of them have their hand over the name of the thing that they're supposed to be selling on their dress.
So they're
failing at their job, basically.
You've got to give them credit, though, for, you know, whoever designed their clothing, the costume, for actually just having the stones just to put the words "available now" right across their breasts.
Yeah.
But then the guy over to the right is the thing that really sells it. I mean, he is just awesome. And so apparently the internet has already just taken that guy and they've just started photoshopping him into hundreds of different situations.
He's doing just a huge full-on Matthew Perry guffaw laugh.
It's like a Francis the Talking Mule laugh. I mean, really, he's just doing it's awesome. So I like the idea, though, that now he has just started popping up in photos all over the internet in like any number of situations.
Those two girls look really smart, too.
They do. And that's the other thing about the internet that I like how just by common consensus, we instantly figured out that he was the most interesting thing in the picture.
Yeah. The girls are really beautiful, but they both just are completely blank slates. I mean, their eyes are just empty chasms of nothingness. Then you go over to the Harley Quinn girl, and she's awesome.
Yeah. by the way, and so Seamus, who actually found these and sent these to us, he says the best part is the guy is clearly just excited over the game he's standing next to. Yeah. Probably his friend playing the game, and these girls are being photographed by a totally different guy unrelated to him. It's awesome. it really is great. But the Harley Quinn Joker girl is like the best thing ever.
She is. She's gorgeous. I mean, that's just brilliant casting, too, because she has just, obviously, whoever was putting this together, she has the perfect, like, facial structure for the makeup they've got her in, and she's just smoking hot.
And she has, like, a great little gleam in her eye, too. She's really selling it.
And green hair and pigtails and just this adorable outfit. She's awesome.
And it's the charming little wave she's giving in picture number two that is, that's really, I mean, it's sort of like hot enough that you don't mind that she's probably going to kill you, you know, and dissolve your body in acid. by the way, apparently in another photo, she's wearing evil bunny slippers. So, so she becomes even better. So you can see these at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 13th. Here is Dante.
Are you going to close out the Geek Watch? Or just...
Are we done? So is that the, we done story-wise? Okay, so we should try to get to the killing recap by like, I don't know, within like 10 minutes, maybe?
Okay, well, right, let me do at least one more story, and then we will...
close this out. Yeah. Hold on.
By Grafthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Awesome. Here is Don Taylor.
A Goodyear blimp burst into flames and plunged to earth in a weekend crash in Germany. The pilot was killed, but three passengers managed to jump to safety when the airship caught fire as it was coming into land at the Reichelsheim Aerodrome near Friedberg.
It's a bad day blimp.
If you would like to look in the Dropbox, by the way, there is a photo that will be in visual aids.
Fantastic.
When the airship was just 6 meters from the floor, the pilot told his passengers, all journalists, to jump to the ground while he tried to land safely. Once the three had leapt clear of the blimp, he took them back up. He took it back up before it became so overwhelmed by flames and crashed to earth in a chilling echo of the Hindenburg disaster. The cause of the crash was not immediately clear, but an investigation was underway. Witnesses reported hearing a loud noise from the engine and smelling petrol fumes. One witness said, we could also hear the cries of the doomed pilot as the fire surrounded him. It was terrible.
Oh, wait, he's dead?
Yes.
Oh, no, I can't make fun of the story at all,
no.
or less.
No, you can't really make fun of it. But
wow, that is a blimp on fire.
There's a blimp on fire. The blimp pilot who died was named by the airships.net website as 42-year-old Australian Mike Narenzik. The journalists who escaped were a photographer from Germany's Bild newspaper and two from RTL Television. The spokesman for Lightship Europe Limited, who owned the airship, said one member of the flight crew suffered fatal injuries. There were no injuries. Two passengers are grounded.
By the way, I got to say, this guy and I are on the same page in one regard. And, you know, if I suspected I was just going to perish in this way, I would absolutely make the press get out first so they could tell of my heroism. So they could make sure that everybody knew that I was awesome.
Yes.
And a badass as I was plummeting to earth in a Goodyear blimp, which, by the way, is... That's just a bad way to go because here's the thing. I know it's a horrible, fiery death and it's, you know, and so forth, but just dying in a Goodyear blimp is just, it's just unavoidably funny. I mean,
no,
it just is.
It
There's
is.
Just something awfully, horribly funny about
yeah.
that.
Zeppelin crash, impressive. Goodyear blimp disaster, funny.
Because Zeppelin is sort of majestic, right?
Yeah.
A Zeppelin is, you know, is like you can
blimp
hear.
Blimp is just a funny word,
right? And it, like with the Zeppelin crash, like you can hear the sound of like this of like the you know of the of you can hear the sound of like Soviet you know hymns being sung as sort of it's you know into the ground and a huge you know awe inspiring fireball of this. Like the Goodyear blimp is just sort of a into the ground in sort of a bad way. So this really is. This is so. Maybe I missed this. Do we know why it caught on fire?
No, they don't know. They're investigating, but they don't know. They heard some kind of a loud noise from the engine, and then smelled gas fumes, and then it caught on fire.
Why would you not just have? So, like, you would think they would have parachutes or something, or just or whatever. Or this is like one of those things where you could use like the jetpack thing that the guy was. We had the story about last week that the
yeah.
guy was inventing. But I mean, it just I guess in my mind's eye, the blimp falls slower than this, but I guess not, because once it loses all of its whatever, its helium or whatever, then it's just a big piece of plastic in the sky.
I wish we had stuck with blimps as a technology, though, because, you know, we had, like, this whole golden age of airships, and they used to actually use them First World War. They used them to travel across the Atlantic.
Right.
It would take, like, 100 hours to go across the Atlantic.
I remember reading this in Reader's Digest when I was a wee lad. There was an article about the Goodyear blimp where they actually, and they made it sound just fantastic. Fantastic, because they talked about how, and this is probably just a gross oversimplification of it, but the article made it sound like driving the blimp was just unbelievably easy once it was up in the air. They said basically there was like a steering wheel and two pedals, just like a car, and that was kind of it. And they said, you know, a 10-year-old could fly the blimp, and it just seemed like the best thing ever. You know, which, you know, I suppose it is until everything just sort of goes sideways on you.
Yeah, so. Whenever you've got like a big thing, you know, full of
stuff.
Stuff, yeah, that can explode.
That really is your problem right there.
The big, the,
big
all,
things full
all
of
the
stuff.
All the explodey stuff.
That's where most of the issues come
yeah.
from. All right.
Do you want to do one more before we...
Well, we should do the snuff watch because it tantalizes me. The idea that the snuff watch is somebody that you care about and that Cheryl was aware of, but who I would never, in your estimation, have been able to guess. So
okay.
I'm just I'm tantalized by the whole thing. That way we can do that. We'll get to the killing update. And then if we have time on the other side, we can get to other stuff. But if not, I want to make sure we don't shortchange people because I've got several. I woke up this morning to a whole bunch of emails about last night's episode of The Killing, plus I had the whole weird dreaming about it thing.
Okay.
So where's the... Here's your snuff watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is Don Taylor with your snuff watch.
Jean Bice, a designer and QVC host known for her headbands and boisterous personality, has passed away at the age of 71. Her cause of death has not been disclosed. Bice, who started the Quacker Factory clothing line and first appeared on QVC in 1995, brought brightly colored outfits and seasonal-themed sweaters to the network and garnered a legion of fans.
I don't think that I would have known her name, but I absolutely know her from First of all, I got to tell you that I'm a huge fan of QVC. I am such a fan of QVC that I got to tell you right now, you know, one of the very, very first things I installed on my phone was the QVC app, specifically the In the Kitchen with David app, which does allow you to watch all of the QVC programming, though. And the Quacker Factory stuff is awesome.
I was so sad that she died because the clothes are hideous. They were just hideous. And it was just like they were just designed to make fat ladies look even worse. But her joy at sharing her big, horrible, garish clown sweaters with bunnies and ducks and stuff on them and little buttons on everything that looked like clown faces and daisies and things. And the clothes were just awful, but she just loved it so much.
And I got to tell you that at the CW, there's a girl who works there named Natalie who is sort of, you know, is kind of Sarah Dillon in the way that she really knows how to put stuff together. She knows how to pick out an outfit. And so she always looks really, really good if she's attempting to, you know, if she's going to a meeting or if she's trying to pull off a certain look. The Halloween party, she did this flawless Carmen Sandiego costume. And so everybody wondered, like, well, what is she going to do, you know, for the Christmas party to follow up her Carmen Sandiego outfit? So for the Christmas party, I swear to got big Quacker Factory sweater that had like little pockets and bells and like little ducks or geese or something like all over the front of it, and it was just terrible. And she was just overflowing with joy that she'd found it somewhere. And I think she and Cheryl had like a whole long bonding session about it in the hallway, just talking about the sweater.
Well, yeah, and if you'd watched the Quacker Factory, there, you know, I mean, there are these women that just loved her clothes, loved the show. Her fans were called themselves the Quackers, and they actually had the website is like currently the Quacker Factory website. All these people are writing in to comment about how much they loved Jean Bice and loved her clothes. And like one woman wrote into the site and said, "So sorry to see hear of Jean's passing. We have been loyal Quackers for years. My sister was in a nursing home, and we would both tune in to watch Jean's shows on QVC for years. We would be on the phone chuckling at antics and admiring new clothes and, of course, ordering from her. She was a friend with inspiration, and you could always count on her shows to lighten your spirits with clothing and inspiring tales. Her clothes just say me, and I wonder how she knew that they would be so perfect."
I mean, and she was, now am I thinking to the right, she had, it was like shortish sort of hair, but that she always had
a headband, yeah.
All of some, now was the headband, was it just a gimmick or was it for some reason?
No,
was it,
I think that was just, it was, it just, was just an accessory thing that she enjoyed, and usually in some sort of fabric that, like, you know, matched her outfit.
That is totally her.
Yeah,
right there. That's awesome.
And she was just, it was one of those things that you would tune into it, and at first you would just laugh at the badness of the clothes, but I would always find myself just sort of being taken over by just the sheer joy that this woman had. She obviously, this was not something where she was cynically making crap to sell to women with bad taste. She really thought these things were adorable and awesome, and the women who bought them thought they were adorable and awesome too.
And that's what sets her apart from, like, you know, so her polar twin is that woman who sells the, she sells everything, but most recently she sells that, like, and I think it's also the name of a vibrator, but that magic bullet thing, that blender thing. So, like, and, you know, and she also, she's the same woman who sells, like, the dual-sided, like, miniature omelet thing or whatever. And it's like, and you never just, you know, that is a woman who's on there just, like, just you know, shilling. She's on there as a shuck.
Yeah.
But you can really tell, and because I do watch a lot of, because infomercials, specifically long-form, you know, infomercial-type channels are just fascinating to me because they're just this absolute representative window into a certain part of American culture, and you can really tell the people on there who either really believe in the product or had a hand in designing or inventing it, because they just sell it, man, like totally and sincerely.
But on the other hand, you get these guys like Bob Mackey, who, you know, he's just slapping his name on something.
Yeah.
And he shows up to do the show, and it's everything he can do to not, like, give away the fact that he knows he's selling crap.
Right.
You know, he has, when he, and this is a very easy to care polyester, and I like the buttons on this. And you're just going, you hate this. You hate this. You hate the people that would buy this. You hate this. You hate being there.
You hate yourself
for
being on
it. You're just counting money in your head.
Exactly.
But no, she obviously just loved doing it, loved being there, loved her customers, and she was awesome.
I got to tell you, by the way, I haven't ever done it because the stuff on QVC is, you know, I'm just such a cheap bastard. And most of it is just so overpriced when you consider, like, the amount of what you're getting for the money, and then the amount of the shipping and the handling and whatever. But I long for the day when there's something on QVC that will enable me to use the Speedy Pay button on my QVC app. And every now and again, I see something and I'm tempted, but I've never actually done it.
I've only ever bought one thing from QVC, and it was because there's this one particular line of body wash and lotion and stuff that I like by this brand called Perlier, and it's really expensive. But they make a honey scented line, which actually does smell like honey, and it's just wonderful, and it's great stuff. But it's like, really, you can only find it sometimes in some department stores, and it's really expensive. But if you get it on QVC, you can get it like in a package, and it's a lot less expensive, and they just ship it right to your house. And it's the only thing I've ever bought from QVC. But once I did, then I was like in their sites, and I started getting this crap in mail and get an email and stuff like all the time.
The only thing I ever bought from QVC, and this is years ago, I bought a Sobakawa pillow filled with buckwheat hulls, not husks, hulls. Which was,
I used to have one of those that was a thing that you wrapped around, like, your neck. You could warm it up in the microwave and wrap it around your neck, and it was delightful.
Those things are kind of great, actually. There was a couple Christmases where my mom actually made those for members of the family, and they were...
Thomas Gill says it's actually rice.
Yeah, no, it's my mom.
The one I had was buckwheat. Thank you very much.
I have the buckwheat hull pillow, the Sobakawa, and then the neck wrap thing. And I guess she must have there's a few years ago, so I guess there was like it was sort of a thing that was a lot of people were doing or giving or making or whatever. Yeah, and the ones my mom made it was like rice and something else like rice, like barley or something. But it was like hard sort of shifty stuff. It was like big grains of sand basically. So I think it was rice and something else, and then. I don't know, whatever scent you put it. And then you would microwave it and you would put it around your neck, and it was like the best thing ever. Which that's a thing that they really ought to have at the airport, right? Before you go on the plane for like an extra for like $4. Like if you pay like a little service charge, they ought to just like greet you at the gate as you're getting on the plane as you're boarding. Here you go, sir. Here's your neck wrap thing. And then you put it around you, and then they give you another one halfway through the flight. As opposed to like this stupid like tiger striped, like vibrating neck ring crap that they sell you at the store, like the luggage door, which never works, which is pointless.
At the office where I get my massage and my acupuncture, Andrew Hill, he has this thing sitting in the corner, which just, it looks like two like kind of lumpy dog toy balls, and it's got a big handle, and it's really kind of awesome looking. He said, yeah, it's for working your neck or working someone else's neck. And I said, and because the back of my neck gets so tight, I said, I could probably use something like that. And he goes, well, it would work. He goes, just get two tennis balls and duct tape them together, and then just lay on your back and lay on that, and that works just as good. And I was like, okay, I guess that makes sense. Thanks. He suggested I duct tape two tennis balls together to put behind my neck.
Well, there you go. There's your snuff watch for...
That's Oriental medicine for you.
It's...
the mysteries of the East.
It's Monday. There's your geek watch, or I'm sorry, your snuff watch for Monday right here, the Rick Emerson radio program. By the way, for those who are wondering, Mr. Andrew Hill and Chris Walsh won the Geek Olympathon this weekend.
Oh, did they?
So,
good for them.
Yeah. So for anybody who's following that that whole thing, they were the proud winners of the Geek Olympathon. Andrew Hill and Chris Walsh, which should surprise like no one. So you're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. In just one moment, we'll do our recap of last night's episode of The Killing. We'll get to that here in just a sec. I want to take this opportunity to tell you that if you are listening to this very fine program and enjoying it, if you listen to Legion of News, if you ask yourself, who are the fine people that bring us the program? Well, it is, of course, all of us here in this room, along with our friends Bruce Agler and Cheryl Kanakoa and Squires Electric, our business partner who helped to make this possible. They actually have wired the building we're in and possibly the building you're in. Who's to say? Because they've been here for over a decade. They've been doing things all over town. They do everything from single structures, single-story homes, to single rooms, to single sockets, all the way up to three-story buildings. We've actually had listeners that have purchased spaces. They've hollowed them out, or they've had to tear everything down, start over again. You got to get it rewired. You got to get something repaired or upgraded. If you have to make sure that whatever the power load you're going to be putting on it, or your internet access is going to be doable with the equipment you've got there and the wiring you've got there, they can actually come and check and make sure that it works. And if not, they can get it taken care of. And that works both ways. If you're going to be renting out a space of your own, or selling your home, or renting out your apartment to somebody else, You want to make sure that what they need is what they're going to get and that what you're promising is what's going to be delivered. So you can talk to Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. You can also find them online at facebook.com/squiresElectric and give them a thumbs up while you're there. Give them a like if you would. You can also read unsolicited testimonials from people just like yourselves who have availed themselves of Squires Electric services and have found it to be reasonably priced, and they're a group of guys that come out and they do the job right, and they do it right the first time, which means you're going to be saving time and money. So you can find them at SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Most importantly, for our purposes here, they are proud supporters of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Find them at SquiresElectric.com or call 503-252-1609, ladies and gentlefolk. And now, I think this is ending. Wait. Excellent. We'll just reset for one moment. Excellent. And? All right, so let's talk about last night's episode of The Killing, Season 1, Episode 12. And because in my dream I was never able to, also because it's a dream, I was never able to navigate the Ain't It Cool search page well enough to find the description. Was last night the penultimate episode?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's the next to the last episode.
Okay, so.
And we should really warn people, this one in particular could have some major spoilers. So if you are not watching the show and want to watch it later and be surprised, you might not want to listen because we may know who the killer is.
I'm actually so spoiler-phobic of the show that I didn't even want to go to Wikipedia. Because sometimes what I'll do is, if I'm trying to figure out if I'm on the right episode, I'll go to Wikipedia and just look at the episode list. I actually didn't even want to go to Wikipedia to see how many episodes are listed for the season for fear that I would inadvertently see something about next week or, you know, whenever it is the finale is. So, but I believe it is 13, yeah.
Wow. And I just want to say, if it turns out to actually be him, if it turns out to actually be, and here come the spoilers, if it turns out to be Darren Richmond, kudos to the show for basically setting up the guy at the beginning of the show when they first started as the guy so obvious that he would be the killer, it couldn't possibly be him.
Right.
And then bring us all the way around in this huge, crazy circle of investigation to bring us back around to, guess what?
Yeah.
It's him!
And, you know, and they did that great thing last night, which, you know, because you don't want to see all the twists coming a mile away, and you don't like everything to be telegraphed, but, you know, here's something that I really do like. I like it when shows can design something to where you, the viewer, you know, the audience, where we figure something out half a second before it happens on the screen. And as soon as the guy resent the email, I actually get chills thinking about it. When the guy resent the email and you hear that ding in the back, and I went, and right before the email sound happened, I thought, oh my God. And then I heard that, you know, and that final, that shot of him illuminated, you know, a backlit to where he's just a silhouette in the door when he goes, what are you doing? And I just thought, oh God, you know, I can't.
Because the thing is, I will, you know, I've mentioned before, So I knew Billy Campbell back in the day. He worked at the Renaissance Fair with me. I knew him pre and just post his Rocketeer period. Really sweet, really nice guy. And he does have a way of seeming very boyish and friendly and very nice. But let's not forget, you know, he played the crazy, evil, abusive husband in that Jennifer Lopez movie where she had to learn some kind of Israeli martial art to save herself. And there was this show, The 4400, where he was like a crazy alien cult leader guy. So he has it in him to do the menacing crazy eyes thing. It's just that he's a perfect choice for a role like this if it is going to turn out to be him.
So here's something that I dreamed last night, actually, and I couldn't quite figure out this morning when I woke up, because it was the thing where my dream and the reality mixed so much. I'm going to have to watch that episode again tonight. So his wife was killed by a drunk driver.
Yes.
That's the implication, or that's, I don't think they've ever actually flat out said it, but I mean, they've given all the indications. He's like, well, she got in that car and she whatever. And so the implication is it's a drunk driving thing that killed his wife.
I can't remember exactly what the specifics were of it, but now I'm thinking,
because he went to the woman's parole hearing and he was telling his assistant, or he was telling his former stepmother, his dead wife's mom. She said, well, you know, can you forgive the woman? And he goes, you know, she made the choice. She got in that car, blah, blah, blah. Now, you know, my wife is dead or whatever. And so I've always assumed it was a drunk driving thing. But I was thinking about this last night, thinking, okay, well, he is based on the email account, he is Orpheus. He is the guy that the escort was warning the other girls about, saying, well, he took me down to the water and kept asking me, you know, what I felt it would be like to drown. And so what I was trying to put together in my head last night was, is this a thing where his wife somehow drowned as a result of the car accident? In other words, could it have nothing? Could it be true that he is the Orpheus guy from the escort website, but not be true that he killed Rosie? Because the thing about Orpheus is Orpheus himself, the actual Orpheus of Roman or Greek mythology, attempted to retrieve his wife from beneath the water, from the underworld. And so I'm trying to think, well, like when he was, if it's true that Richmond took the hooker down to the water and was like, what do you think it's like to drown? Do you suppose that could just be him musing out loud about his wife, but it doesn't necessarily make him the guy who killed Rosie?
Right. It doesn't. And that's the thing we know about this show, is just because this particular episode ended with such a strong indication that he is the murderer, it's still possible that it's not him.
Yeah.
Although I'm thinking we do only have one episode left. Each episode is one day in the investigation. I think that I think we have reached that point that yes, we, you know.
I mean, it's probably him, but I mean,
who's
to, I mean, at this point, I think it would almost strain credulity for that to be true about him, and yet for the girl to have been killed by someone else.
I guess we've never actually specifically heard on the show how his wife died. We knew it was in an accident, because if you go online, there's a "Who killed Rosie Larson?" Discussion cut thing on there, and there's a "How Darren Richmond's wife died" pool.
Yeah,
that people have been running. So I guess we haven't actually heard to this, but that other than it being a car accident,
they have indicated, and we don't even know if she was, if the woman who was on who was in prison, who was up for parole, we don't even know if she was in a separate car. She might have met, for that matter, she might have been driving the car, because all we know is that Richmond's wife was on her way to meet him, because they were not together. He was like on a debate, or he was doing something, and she was coming to meet him, and she died. And so she might not even have been driving. The woman that we saw in for parole might have actually been driving the car with Richmond's wife in it. So it is possible that she drowned, and that, so therefore that's why he has this fixation on calling himself Orpheus, and then also taking the girl down to the river. So the only question then is it like, because the thing about the killing has been, as you noted last week, you actually put this better than I think anybody has, that it's like you're just turning over rocks and seeing all these horrible things. It's just that none of them are really the horrible thing you're after. And so he could just be some other additional horrible thing that unfortunately is related to but not really directly tied to the murder of Rosie, who you know, could have been killed by whatever, the skeezy billionaire guy or anybody.
Yeah.
But that whole sequence of just, and then the thing of when Holder shows up and he just sees like the billboards of Richmond everywhere with that weird grinning face of his. I mean, the whole thing was so creepy. It was so unbelievably creepy.
Yes, it was. And the sister has turned out to be just a horrible piece of work, hasn't she?
Well, certainly. I mean, no worse than the rest of the family. It seems Seems like the sister is the member of the family who did not turn over a new leaf, you know, because you get the feeling that Michelle Forbes, that Mitch was obviously not an angel, and Stan, we know, was like a muscle for the mob or whatever. Seems like the sister has just not gone onto the new path that Mitch and Stan did. She did not reform herself.
No.
And there's a lot more there because she was obviously sort of the black sheep of the family, and the mom kind of shunned her a little bit. And so there's something weird going on there. But the sister, I think, just never got. By the way, I will, and I did text Cheryl something last night, and I didn't give any spoilers, but I just said, ha-ha, they paid off the shoes.
Yes,
because Cheryl's
right.
Whole thing was, they've never gone back to the shoes that they found, and they paid off the shoes last night. And it turned, so that, because that is the sister that was on the escort site.
Right.
So then the question is, and then here's another thing I dreamed, strangely enough. The other thing I dreamed was that somehow, was it true that Rosie was depositing, because they said she was depositing money in the casino, not withdrawing it.
Right.
And so my whole thing, well, was she somehow depositing money for Darren Richmond? Was he funding his early campaign? Because we know that he was cash-strapped. Was he funding his early campaign with money? And was she, even if he wasn't having an affair with her, was she being like a cash courier for him somehow?
Yeah, no, I think she was just a hooker.
That's possible.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the real nail in the coffin too for Darren being the killer, though, is it's not just that he was Orpheus. It's not just that he was creepy and the girly, but also we now know because of the photos the mayor gave to Gwen that he had like an ongoing relationship with Rosie.
Was there's that Rosie? I couldn't quite tell.
No, that's her. And there's lots and lots and lots of pictures of her. So,
all right. Somebody says that his sister bailed Stan out well, that's notable too. You know, that I guess she has money from being a hooker or whatever.
Yeah.
But the sister, yeah. So the sister bailed Stan out. So there's obviously a whole lot of weird, because this is listener Ricky says, seems like that creepy guy who works for Stan was let go a little too unceremoniously, and the sister bailed Stan out as well. So it's just a whole lot of weird. Going on there in that family, it's all just like so completely bizarre.
And the creepy fiance has just disappeared entirely.
Oh, Callum Running?
Yeah.
Well, see, I never found him all that creepy. You only find him creepy as he kidnapped Starbuck.
And I will always find him creepy because he kidnapped Starbuck.
And that just seemed like a sort of another. He was another sort of external piece of evidence of Lyndon's just sort of mental disintegration or her precarious mental state. And by the way, not only the Cylon who kidnapped Starbuck, but then Hilo shows up.
Yeah.
As the ex-husband, which was awesome. So it was like a whole Battlestar thing going on.
We're just crawling. Yes.
That was great. The other great, 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 creepy, beautifully executed thing about last night, and you noted that early on that they do something in The Killing they don't do on most shows, which is to show you, like, to attempt to show you to whatever degree a television show can, like, how actually horrible it is for everybody when someone is killed, as opposed to Law and Order, where it's just sort of voyeuristic, or CSI, where it's voyeuristic, or the other end of the spectrum, like your Matlock type show, where the dead person is just a MacGuffin. They're just there as a way for Ben Matlock to have a courtroom sequence. And The Killing really tries to show you the actual horror of it, and they pulled that off really, really well with one specific thing. This is the other thing that I kept creeping into my dreams last night. Last night was actually the first time, I think, that they have shown an extended shot of Rosie Larson's face as a dead person.
Yeah.
And she's got that horrible drowning thing where her eyes are all kind of bulgy in the trunk. It was just awful, just terrible. But I mean, but they actually exercised a lot of self-discipline by not showing you that for 11 weeks. And then finally last night they say, and they've also done a really clever thing of, in the first episode, you see them pulling the trunk out of the water, and I think maybe you see the body under a sheet or whatever in the morgue, but you don't see the face. And then they spend the next 10 weeks just showing you photos of her alive, and then last night they finally come back and they say, and here's what she looks like dead again. So they do that thing of making you identify with her as a person, and then they reveal, like, how horrible it is, you know, the way that she died and everything. Several people are saying that something skeezy is going on with Stan and the sister. Because there was that way he was looking at her in the kitchen that one day, and the fact that she bailed him out of jail, and the fact that she's done something to irritate the mom that has never been explained. So many people are speculating there could be something weird going on with Stan and the sister.
I was just operating under the assumption that they may have had a previous relationship. Like, you know, they dated in high school or something before. Or he had an affair with her at some point or something.
Or that they were both in, you know, because if she's an escort and he worked for the mob, it's not like those two things could be unrelated.
Mm.
You know, so she might have gotten into that because of him or, you know, whatever. So, well, I guess so at this point. So if we were to lay bets, you're going to bet, if you had to, that it's Richmond.
Yeah, I think so. I think we've discovered that it's him, and now, because we only have one more episode for, you know, them to tie it all up, have the showdown, have the discussion, tie it all up, you know, take it wherever it's going to go from here to finish out the season.
And I guess I'm so used to The Wire, where they do, you know, The Wire, we do this thing of the penultimate episode was always where the big bust or the big arrest or the big whatever happened, and then they would have the actual final episode, which was sort of like, it was always like a coda, where they would just have an epilogue, sort of, you know, tying up the loose ends. But it doesn't look like that's going to be the case here, unless it's like a 2-hour finale or something. It's like they're going to have to get it all done in 1 hour. So,
because I know next year they're bringing it back, and it's going to be Linda and Holden working on another crime, and how they're going to, like, you know, follow this up, not even top it, but how they're going to follow it up.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
The one thing I will do is, as soon as this season is done here, I'm going to go and I'm going to watch the Danish version, because I hear the Danish version is just exceptional, that it's wonderful. And so I don't know how it compares to this, but I've heard that it's fantastic. So, yeah, that is just a thing that I just. was disrupting my sleep all night. It was just that whole image of Billy Campbell just sort of like flanked by the, you know, what are you doing in here? And just, you know, and just with the weird light and the whole, it's all so creepy. And I mean, all right, well, there you go. So, and I guess we're done there. By the way, I got to tell you, one final thing is, especially because apparently he is himself, like, from Denmark or whatever. The guy who plays Holder is just... And what a great character he has become. Because he obviously, you know, has his... He had, you know, addiction issues or has addiction issues. And he obviously is a little skeezy to begin with. Maybe, you know, not all that tactful. But last night was a great example of, like, you see that he really does know how to be a cop in a certain rarefied way. Like, you know, when he's dealing with his old... When he tells he's talking to his old undercover narc partner. And, you know, he does understand a certain slice of the underworld or the criminal world that obviously that Lyndon does not.
Sorry.
Okay. So there you go.
That's let's be getting the text that says, I know what you did.
Oh, just don't. By the way, we should, because I have to use this bed at least once per day. So that was the recap of last night's episode of The Killing. Don't forget the season finale is coming up this coming Sunday. That is a week from last night. I will end things on this note. This is from listener Sasha, who says, this is about my squirrels. My husband treats the neighborhood squirrels like pets. He feeds them peanuts. He's even trained them to take peanuts off of his head. WTF. But when he isn't home, all caps, the squirrels come in my house and try to bite my toes. I asked my husband to stop feeding these demon spawn, and he tried to guilt trip me for not loving animals. They bite my toes! Gah! So there you go. There's the map.
I like squirrels, but I wouldn't want them in my house.
Seriously, they're sitting there just staring in the window. I feel like Tippi Hedren. All right, well, with that, we bring the curtain down on this. Another exciting episode of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. We'll have a musical interlude here, followed by an encore of the day's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. It is Monday, June 13th, 2011, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. See you tomorrow. Bye now.